Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we're going to keep the momentum going, and it's all about creating a ripple effect. How can we see how we're living in this world? How can we see how to help ourselves and others? And how can we see that it does make a difference? What is really the point of being here on this earth if is it supposed to be to go to work, you know, raise your kids, and have a great obituary? I don't think so. We really have talked many times about being in the present moment. What does that really mean? Many people are living longer these days, too. We also talk about loneliness. We also talk about a lot of abuse issues, things that have happened in our lives and how that's created our circumstances. You know, I spoke to someone the other day and I said, what are you doing today? Well, you know, I'm really busy. I got this going on and I got that going on. And well, you know, I have all this da-da-da-da-da. And I said, perhaps you might want to change that too. I'm having a wonderful life. All of these things are going on. They couldn't see that concept yet. However, that's really what we do on this radio show, is share concepts, ideas, thoughts, phrases, and words to help you say, you know what, ooh, I might like to change my wording. I might like to go experience that. I might like to find out something more. And today, we're going to be speaking with Doug Carnine. He is the author of Saint Badass, Personal Transcendence in Tucker Max Hill. You know, Doug, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a real pleasure to have you with us. And this concept we talk about in this book is very, very much needed. But I'll tell you, a lot of people, it's going to shake them to their core, yes?
Yes, it's a hard-hitting book, and it's seen as gripping and grim and then inspirational.
You know, Doug, I think the book, again, Saint Badass, is really about... you know, there's people in this world, we go along, and we want to show our good side. We want to show, put the mask on, make sure you have makeup on, make sure your car is washed and your grass is cut, you know. But when something happens and you experience something within the four walls of your home or the four walls of your job or in the four walls of wherever you're existing, you kind of want to hide that. And people have hidden those secrets and those stories for so long, I think, in our society that now is a time that we got to say, you know, what are we going to do with these stories? Are we going to take them to our grave? Are we going to keep these secrets? Or are we going to break the chain so it's no longer repeated? In other words, hey, dude, this is what happened to me. It really sucked, and don't you ever do it because it's not a great thing to do, right?
Right. And that's really what the book is about these four friends of mine, all convicted of violent crimes, who had very abusive childhoods. They grew up to be violent criminals and ended up in maximum security prison. And but those in those four walls, just like you say, the four walls for all of us, they recognized that their stories that they had told themselves about what had happened to them and who they were was killing them, almost literally.
Right.
And so they turned around and decided to take up mindful kindness. And that's what the book is about how the five of us work together on mindful kindness. And even though they are still in prison, their lives are very different because they're seeing the world differently and they're abandoning the stories that are so horrible that drug them down and creating this new life and these new relationships through kindness and through mindfulness.
You know, Doug, I think until you air out the story, there's no way you can actually look at it. You know, I think until someone's actually going to sit down and say, please tell me your story. Tell me your story. I want to hear it. It's really hard to air out your house unless you open up the windows. Do you know what I mean? You know, that stuff spins around in there. And until you are able to say, to give validity to the story and you and yourself in that experience, how can you ever let it go, right?
Yeah, and that's why in the book, the introduction of each of these men is their story in their own words, largely unedited. Very, very little editing has happened because we wanted it to come across in their words. And it's just as you have said, that once they laid out their story, they saw their story, and they faced it, and they were willing to make it public, then they were letting it go and moving beyond it and ready to take up a new way of living their lives.
You know, because it really feels, I mean, when you come into this world, and especially when you have childhood abuse and that's the beginning of your entire life, you almost think that that's normal. But then when you find out that it's not normal, you almost feel like you're less than, you're stripped down, you have no identity, nobody wants to hear you, nobody wants to see you, nobody wants to talk to you, you're kind of weird, you're kind of crazy, you know. We all know those acronyms that everybody puts on people. And then you either end up in a mental hospital, you end up committing suicide, you end up on drugs, street drugs, illegal drugs, or you end up in jail. Don't you think that sometimes that seems to be the path in the past, but I think your book is definitely breaking that path. But I think your stories really in the book share how people did go along that path.
Yes, they very definitely went along that path. And in fact, what you said about feeling what's normal, it's so interesting. A prisoner I've been writing more recently, who's not in the book, in telling his story, told me that he was molested so much by so many different people that until he was 8 years old, he thought that was normal.
Right.
So you can imagine the adjustment he's working through in trying to let that story go. And he's struggling, but he's making great strides. He'll give presents to other prisoners. When new prisoners come in, he'll make sure that they know what to do and what not to do, because as you can imagine, prisoners experience such violence. One of the prisoners in the book wrote about, in one of his letters, about how he saw a man stabbed because somebody scuffed his shoes and didn't say, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So this new friend that I'm writing is telling new inmates what to do and what not to do, and it actually can be a matter of life and death. So that's the way he's changing his life and moving away from that horrible life of abuse that he began with.
You know, right in the beginning of your book, in fact, it's in the introduction, you have written a sentence that says, letters from these men described in gut-wrenching detail the horrific abuse they suffered in childhood, terrible crimes they committed as adults, and the dehumanization of life in prison. But you know what? Really, if you look at those last three words, dehumanization of life, really, you know, if you look at the essence of any abuse on children, physical, verbal, emotional, sexual, you want to take whatever you want to get from that. Any kind of actions that were not caring, nurturing, and kindness, and just the opposite, those are dehumanizing from the beginning anyway. So really, when we say dehumanization in prison, hey, sometimes prison's better than their house was.
Yes, and it was interesting in getting to know these men so well, because I hadn't done any prison work before I started this correspondence and wrote this book. The single biggest surprise to me was how every one of these men felt like they were trash, that they were thrown away,
right.
They were worthless, they had no value. And that amazed me because it was shared by all of them and with such depth.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they could start turning their lives around and they saw that they actually could do some things that might seem little to us on the outside, but small acts of kindness inside can have dramatic effects. And then they began to see that they did have support, that they could do something positive. And that was a key element in them being able to turn their lives around.
You know, I can remember many times throughout my life, people would say, you know, the verbal abuse was pretty rough. And, you know, all of the demonstrative words, you know, all the curse words, and then your, you know, don't talk, don't come around me, get away from me, you're trash, you're a piece of garbage, you're this, that, or the other. And, you know, after decades of learning, listening to that, you eventually believe that. So, you know, I think that many people hear this and they call it bullying right now. However, it's really been perpetuated, and, you know, we look at it as bullying now in the kids. However, if you look at their adult parents or their grandparents, the reason that kind of it's not getting stopped is parents and grandparents have that in their past too, so they kind of think of it as normal. You know, in other words, if we really took history back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, this kind of abuse and these kinds of way people acted, that was what it was. You know, you'll take it back to even great grandparents. Hey, just like the cowboys and Indians, you know, shoot them if they just say something wrong, right?
Yeah. And in fact, one of the things I do, I serve as the president for a nonprofit organization that trains abusive parents all over the world and how to shift from violence and abuse and learn how to be positive, how to problem solve, how to emotionally regulate, and learning a set of skills that they then in turn can use with their children. And it reduces arrest, it improves health, it does all kinds of things. And the real power of this system is you change the parent and you change the child. So what we're seeing is you're fundamentally changing the lives of two generations at once. And that's how, or that's one way you can break that chain you were talking about.
Right. You know, we see a lot of people go into like rehab and stuff, you know, and they go for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, whatever it would be. And then when they get out, they go right back into having a relationship with family members, you know, whatever that might be, or some friends that they had or some people in society. And what happens is they get right back into some of these same similar things. And really the chain rarely is broken because they really can't conceptually see that, you know, in other words, if you learn to get out of all of that stuff and you're starting to take train B, but everybody else is always on train A, and you get out and you say, okay, I'm going to go back to train A with my train B knowledge, doesn't kind of work, you know, sometimes. Yet in your book, really what you talk about is that transcendence. You know, no matter what the circumstances, can you take the information you gained in B and bring it to A and decide either you're going to play that dance or you're not going to, right?
Yes, that's the central message of the book, that you may be in a situation where the dances you see around you are very negative, they're very harmful, they're very destructive. And you are in that situation, as in prison, and you can't escape it. Or you might be in a relationship for some reason you cannot escape, and the dance is very negative. But you don't have to join the dance. You can create your own dance that, in fact, is very positive. It won't be easy to do, but it's clearly possible. And one of the values of this book is it demonstrates with four men how they're able to not play that old dance.
And, you know, I think sometimes, too, society really straps us down, or legacy or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, when you get out and your family members might be still doing the dance, everybody says, oh, blood is thicker than water. You know, I mean, the family is thicker than whatever that saying is. And it's sort of like, you know, I think sometimes we get so stuck into that, believing that that's really true, that sometimes suspends us in places that really aren't that healthy. Sometimes you just say, hey, I need to find another family, you know, or I need to create my own family, or I need to just continue on and I'll be just fine, right?
Yeah, what I've seen a lot is that people coming out of prison, they often have fines from before they're in prison. They can't find work because they've been in prison. So then they don't pay those fines. So then the judge fines them more. So the fines pile up. They can't find a place to live. And so what happens is we turn prisoners loose and expect some kind of magic.
Right.
That
everything they've learned in their lives is going to disappear, and they're magically these model citizens, and they can somehow, through magic, find work and a place to live. But without help, this is almost impossible. That's what I've learned about prison. What I think about prisons is they have a motto, and the prison motto is, recidivism is our business. Mm-hmm. The prisons are designed for inmates to return to prison.
Mm. Well, you know what, I think really what we've been talking about too, and if you could share a little bit how this your project got started here, is that I think the number one thing we talked about is giving someone an identity, that they have value, that they're a human being, that they actually have a name. So, Doug, do you think did you start each letter with dear and then their name? Because that actually gave them their identity, which probably no one else ever did, right?
Right. And I think another thing that really made a big difference with them is they would tell me about how they were weakening their unkind habits. They were, you know, they'd stopped using drugs. And as a side note, it's as easy to get drugs in prison as it is outside of prison. So giving up drugs in prison is a big deal because you don't have to. If you have money, you can keep using drugs. So these guys were able to stop these habits, and they would write me about that. And then I could honestly encourage them. And then they felt that they were being recognized as really making accomplishments. But even more so is these acts of kindness. Like there's a guy called Old Cornbread. He's been in prison for, I don't know, 30-some years. Nobody on the outside ever writes, never has visitors, and all he likes to do is walk around. But the prison shoes wear out really quickly. So Roy, the main person I write and the first one I wrote to, found an old pair of tennis shoes and paid $1 for a new pair of shoelaces and put in some new insoles and gave them to Old Cornbread. And he said Old Cornbread, it was like someone had given him a Mercedes Benz. I mean, he lit up, he levitated, he was floating around. And this had a tremendous impact, obviously, on Old Cornbread. But the really big impact was on Roy, because Roy had done something kind and had seen this really powerful effect. And that effect affected Roy. And he realized that he could have relationships built on kindness, he could help people, and that this was the key to his new life.
You know, I think sometimes we say bad things happen to people and that kind of like messes up their life and that's just a bad person and blah, 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 you know. But really, I think you wrote it in your book about being in jail, about breaking cycles. You know, sometimes we say we want to break a cycle and we're going to do it a positive way. We're going to do it with therapy. We're going to do it with a nice little retreat by the beach. We're going to do it with all of our friends and our family. And we're all going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Well, good luck with that. But you know what? When people go to jail or when people go into mental health hospitals, that breaks a cycle. They don't realize it, but they are actually, in effect, many can break a cycle. They could say, no more. I'm not going to have kids. I'm not going to have that. It's not going to perpetuate in my lineage. I'm not going to go out and abuse anyone else. It stops now. It stops right here. I'm not going to do the dance that that would make it go on. I am not my father's father. I am not, you know, my mother's son, whatever, and I'm going to stop it now. So while we might not agree with the way it happens, we might not feel that it fits our picture, we may feel that it doesn't shake and shimmy and feel good to us, it still is a same process. And you can pick and choose which one you want, but I think that it's very effective in noting that things do stop there, yes?
Yes. It really gives these men an opportunity to reflect on their lives, like you say, the story, and a hard story for most of them it's been. I'm writing to another new prisoner right now who was in Pelican Bay, one of the most notorious prisons in the United States. He was in solitary confinement for 6 years. And after about the fourth or fifth year, it finally got through to him that he could make a decision to change how he lived his life. And now he's he's remarkable. He's still in prison, but he teaches classes on how to live outside of prison. He's teaching 3 classes right now. He has 90 students. He's writing 2 books. I mean, he's an amazing positive force inside of prison. And that came about because he finally decided to abandon his old story, to not dance the old dance, and to make himself a new life.
And really, in effect, he walked it through them. In other words, you know, when you say, I have fear of this, and if you sit with fear in a 4-square-walled room, okay, and you just keep feeling fear every single day and feel it harder and bigger and feel it to every single cell in your body to shake, rattle, and roll fear in and out of all of your cells and out of all of your thoughts and the old thing, you're going to finally say, hey, dude, you know what? That fear, that doesn't have, it doesn't have a hold on me anymore. You know, fear is something I can think about in my mind, but hey, I'm good. So really, in effect, what he did was, in that amount of time, was he worked through all of what life was, and now he's creating his life that he wishes, yes?
He sure is. And I visited him about 2 weeks ago, and it was really, it was a wonderful visit, and it reminds me of something we were talking about earlier, because we were sitting there, my younger daughter, myself, and Ernesto, and Ernesto's mother. And he said afterwards, I realized that when I was talking to you and Leah, my daughter, he said, that's the first time in my life I felt normal.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything in his life had been dysfunctional family, crime, and prison.
Right.
So the opportunity for people to change is enormous, and the need for support to help people who want to make these changes is enormous too.
Yeah, I think we see experiences in life like when people get sick and we want to help them, but then we get kind of tired of it and people sort of say, aren't you better already? You know, I'm tired of helping you. Can't you figure it out? And they drift away. We see this with elders. You know, anybody over the age 50, I call an elder these days. And I say, you know, when the people around them start to drift away and they're left in their home by themselves, and, you know, you look at that and how is loneliness really helping us these days? So really, I think the idea of, are we in a world existing just for ourselves and we just put out feelers because we're on to the next thing? Or are we really in it for the long haul in helping people around us? 2 totally different things.
Absolutely. 2 different approaches to life. And the most remarkable interaction I've had with a prisoner just got concluded a few days ago. This very, very sad young man who's a child molester, and he told me, he said, I'm going to confess to you. He'd been reading the book of How Love Wins, The Power of Mindful Kindness, and he started understanding the importance of being kind. And so he decided to confess to me. And he said he's molested over 100 children. And he said, I'm due for parole on April 1st in Arkansas. And
mm-hmm.
he said, can you help me? I never want to be free because
mm-hmm.
I'm uncontrolled. And so he asked me to make sure that he spends the rest of his life in prison, because that's the only way he feels he can break his cycle. So I had frequent interactions with the prosecutor's office, and just a few days ago got notification that, in fact, they did put a hold on his release and they're going to extradite him. So he's mm-hmm. going to get this wish, which is the most unusual wish, and that is he will never be free.
Right, but then don't you also have to look at it too, Doug, is that he'll never be free to commit it and to perpetuate it, but also it does set him free in a way, because it now sets him free so he can decide what to do with the rest of his time, you know?
You're absolutely right, and that is probably the most important point, is that there are different ways to be free,
mm-hmm.
and he physically will not be free, but it's as my other men that are in the book that I wrote have said, we're not physically free, but we're spiritually free and we're psychologically free, because now no one can break our spirit.
Right, right. You know what, let's talk for 1 second. You have a sentence in the book. If encouraging kindness turns out to be possible, You talk about how you can help them, and then you also say, as you can see, I trust you. And I will tell you, that is the number one word, trust. Even my book on Amazon, which is very tiny, which has just pictures and a few phrases, is called Trust. It's all about trust, how you are seen in the world, and can someone else see you as you are, perfect, imperfect, whatever that might be, just to see you, yes?
Yes, because what trust means is that you recognize the other person as a human of value, that you trust them as someone who has something to offer and someone who has potential and someone who can do good things in the world. You trust each other because you're sharing that sense of purpose and meaning and willingness to go forward. I think that's probably the most important kind of trust.
I think trust is almost a stamp that says, boom. It's almost like when I hear the word trust, it's almost like if you're standing there and someone's everywhere and all of their stuff around them, when someone says trust, even just say the word trust yourself, it's almost like your spirit has now landed in your body and it goes boom. You could hear this like boom sound, you know? It's almost like, okay, now I'm free to bring that which whatever is me here, I'm here, you know, and I can trust that I'm going to be okay, I can trust that the world is okay, trust that I have safety and security, trust that all these other things around will start working on, but trust is just, you would trust that you were able to be seen, heard, and actually that you're able to be loved. 99.99999% of these people do not believe that they are trusted enough to be loved, are they able to be loved, or that they can give love. They don't even know what the word means, right?
Yes, it's true. I think your point is important, very, very important. Trust has all those powerful attributes, and it creates all those powerful feelings. And one of the four men in my book who was released from prison and was taken advantage of and fell into problems because of his family, things you were talking about, was going back to prison, and then he had a conversation with this woman. They spoke for the first time over the phone for 4.5 hours, and they developed a trust in each other and then a love in each other, and they're going to be married, and it's that relationship and that trust that's going to keep them so he'll never go to jail again.
Right, and you know, I think trust is the idea of seeing, you know, just as well as truth is the identity, you know. So those things, if you don't have those cores, that's really where to start. And I think sometimes you need it to be reflected back to you from someone else, because you could say, I trust myself, but really you don't unless you trust in yourself. You know, it's trust and truth are really kind of tough words. But once you just hear them, and like I said a second ago, you know, your spirit drops into your body and you hear that boom sound, you know, there's no going back. You know what it feels like, you know. So I think really trust and truth, I think, really gives us identity and a sense of, hey, I'm a human being walking this earth and, you know, I'm able to be here, right?
Yeah, actually, even personally, your remarks have gotten me and will get me thinking more about this notion of trust and how it fits in this larger picture of how we change our lives and in mindful kindness, how we need to make trust in ourselves and trust in our others and others much more important. Because as you said, that just saying the word trust has
right.
an effect, and the feelings of trust can reach out in many different and many constructive ways. And so to have trust, you need truth. But trust, then, is so powerful.
You know, I, when I wrote the book, you know, with the trust is that more when it was coming out of a time of, you know, that everything and everybody, it just wasn't working. And I said, I've got to trust. Trust that the door handle's there to go outside. Trust that the sun is going to be there when I go outside. Trust that you know, everything is not going to discombobulate today. Trust that if everything isn't good today, there's another moment. There's a next moment. There's a next moment, you know. And trust that if there isn't, that it was all just inexperience. You know, I think sometimes we get so hung up on the idea of life as, you know, lessons to be learned, and you're either good or you're bad, and all of this kind of like separation and dichotomy kind of stuff. And I always say to people, life is just an experience, period. Don't give it any other story. Don't give it any other validity. Just experience it. Okay, sit with it. Next. You know, next.
Yep.
Keep going.
The way you can make each moment fresh mm-hmm. is such a beautiful thing, because then it brings joy into your life.
Right. You know, I think so, too, when we want to say about people that are in prison or people that are in rehab or mental hospitals, we always say, oh, poor them. Oh, they deserve it. Oh, that's where they should be. And we always say that what we are living is something that's better. And right there, that just shows the system of good and bad, and aren't we better than someone else, instead of saying, you know, we have the same souls and the same spirit, and we all interact. You know, I always, when I go to McDonald's, I could sit down, and it doesn't matter who is across from me, and it's almost like there's this one McDonald's. I go there about once a month, and when I go there, it's almost like it's an experiment for me. I sit down, and the guy across from me, he's sitting there on his tablet, you know, just flipping through it, and I said, oh, my gosh, doesn't that drive you crazy? I said, what are you doing? You trying to find something to read, or are you just flipping through your page? He says, no. He says, the Wi-Fi connection keeps going out here. I said, oh, doesn't it drive you nuts? I says, mine does that at home all the time. And he says, oh, I didn't know that. He says, I thought it was just here. And apparently he was a homeless. He, if I put labels, would look homeless. And but he definitely was sitting there with no one talking to him or anything. I talked to him for like 20 minutes, you know. But you could see how that was just a soul-to-soul connection with zero labels on it. I think we try to say, oh, that person has a disease. That person, they have this. That person's another race. That person. And we tend to put ourselves in this little silo where only we're going to interact with those things that make us feel good, right?
Yes, yeah. And it's so true that the key to being kind, actually, is recognizing the humanity of the other person, whoever it is, the person in McDonald's or mm-hmm. whoever we interact with.
Right.
And once we recognize that, then we can have a very genuine conversation, like you said, like you did, you know, very authentic interaction.
Yeah, and it's like, why put the labels on it? You know, we were going down the street one time in New Orleans, and there was this woman that was sleeping out in the yard of a very expensive home. And I had said, oh, my gosh, look at that woman. I wonder if she's okay. And there were other people in the car, and here's what their responses were. One said, oh, it's just a homeless person. She must be sleeping there. And another woman that was in the car said, oh, no, maybe it's just her husband put her out, and that's where she's got to sleep. You know, and I'm kind of sitting there going, oh, my gosh. And then all I did was, after that dialogue they said, I just said, I see you. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go any other conversation, didn't mm-hmm. get involved in any other drama or stories. I just said, I see you. Mm-hmm. And I would just hope that somewhere out there, as our words create ripple effects, is that, you know, someone would feel that they were seen, that they were heard, that they were acknowledged, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, you make the point about being heard, because one of the things that I've been learning is that kindness requires that you know something about the other person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise you just impose your own ideas.
Right.
And the way you find out about another person in terms of what matters to them is you're curious, you're interested. And that means you have to ask questions. And that shows they're being heard, because you want to hear what they have to say. So it's
right.
This essential aspect of acknowledgement of their humanity, showing it through interest in them, curiosity about their lives, that feeds both of us. It feeds us and it feeds the other person, because kindness is something that helps the giver and the receiver, always.
You know, it always drove me crazy when people would always say, you know, around Thanksgiving, Doug, they would always have, you know, we're going to be kind and we're going to clean out our cupboards and our closets and take all that down to the food bank or whatever, right? And I always think of that, to me, that was always like, so why are you giving them your leftovers? Are they less than, you know?
Yeah.
Or you always
yeah.
buy the generic food, or you always buy the odd stuff and give it to them. And it always never sat with me. It just didn't sit with me. I've been the receiver of many food baskets from food pantries myself over my life. And I'll tell you, when you get the food baskets, it's like the food would all be either moldy or broken up in the box. And that's almost like you really felt even less than again in receiving it. And it just did not feel good. And I've always believed that we should stop doing some of these food pantries, you know, in some areas. I would encourage everyone to go to the food pantry and just say, you know what? I had someone that was asking me about the food. Can you show me what a box looks like? And please go there and check it out. And then the next time you donate, maybe make up some different baskets and go around your neighborhood and give them out. Because if you ever were a receiver of one of these baskets, you would be shocked in many areas to know what's in there. It's pretty bad. And even to look at, you know, a lot of times when they deliver food to the elderly people, you know, they're delivering meals and it will be white bread with that plastic cheese on it, you know, and then maybe a little bag of pretzels and a bottle of water. I mean, my gosh, does an elderly person really benefit from that at all? You know, many are sick and they need more nutrition. So really start to go out, and I would say creating again, as Doug and I are saying, is let's start creating more ripple effects. Let's go out and see how people are treated in many different situations and various other things around you, and then say, how can I do that differently? How can I not go in and take it over? How can I just give something differently? You know, next time you're giving clothes to some group or something, put them all on hangers, you know, and like maybe line them up or something. I've always had the idea that we give out our clothes, that we should always, like if your woman's got a bunch of clothes, put a box with it, some wrapping paper and a bow, and then take them to a local school that's maybe of a lower income and say, you know what, I have all these clothes. Maybe the kids want to give their mother a gift for Christmas. Let them pick it out and they can wrap it up. Whoa, how revolutionary. Something didn't go to the dump, you know? So I think it's really about our concepts and our ideas. And what you're saying is when you're doing acts of kindness, it's not always about pushing things on people and you want and you know this, Doug, is that if you're giving something and the other person doesn't receive it in the way in which you believe they should, you all get offended, you know? So it's kind of how do you do kindness in the best way possible for everyone, you know, instead of kindness doesn't always have to be, you know, you have to see something back because then when you do, it doesn't always fit your bill, you know?
Absolutely. Kindness has to be done, if it's genuine, for the act of intention and doing good for others. In fact, there's research showing that if people who volunteer for selfish reasons, for data, sort of talk about all the good things they do. People who volunteer live much longer, but mm-hmm. people who volunteer for the wrong reasons or don't volunteer at all tend to have shorter lifespans. So the reason that we give is really important. It has to be genuine. And as you're saying, to show respect in what we give. So it's good to make sure that if you're involved in a food drive, that it's not insulting to the people who receive it. I've had a really wonderful experience where we open up churches in Eugene when the temperature is below 28 degrees, and everyone who's serving is told and acts and shows that the people coming in are guests. They're homeless,
right,
but they're our guests. And one of the cooks has actually been involved in international food competition. So the food may not be gourmet, but it's very nutritious, it's very well prepared, and it's given with great respect to the individuals, and they appreciate it. So it can be done well, but it needs to be done well because that's how you show respect to the other person.
Let's talk for a little bit about, you have a comment in your book, Doug. It says, pride is very thick in the jail. You know what? I almost would like to change that word. I would say it's not pride. It's coming of being, almost like identity and self. It's almost when your self-worth and your self-value arises. So sometimes it isn't always pride. Well, I guess you could take it for the negative on the part when people say it's pride because they have ownership or something. But really, as people start to develop themselves, it's not always pride. It's they come to be, don't you think?
I do, and it's interesting because actually a better word in that quote than pride would have been arrogance, because that's what he meant. He was
talking about the negative part, yeah.
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 Because you're right. When people start to turn their lives around, they deserve to feel pride, and they should feel pride because they're doing something constructive for themselves and something constructive for others.
Yeah, and it's a tough place to be sometimes too, especially after therapy and stuff, or sometimes people go into rehab or come out of the hospital or whatever. When people start to want to stand up for themselves, others who are still doing the dance see them as arrogant, see them as being bullish, see them as being the opposite of, and they try to still strip them down even further, you know? And that's when really your sense of who you are has got to almost not have walls around it, but it almost has to be like an energy source that can't be touched, it can't be prodded, it can't be deteriorated. It just exists, you know? Otherwise, you know, hey, you're going to be kicked to the curb again.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's very common for the prisoners who work on mindful kindness to be told that they're being stupid, that it's stupid to be kind to other people. They should keep everything for themselves, get everything they can. So they have to be able to explain and maintain their sense of purpose so that they can keep moving forward and not be derailed or undermined by all of these criticisms, which are very common.
Right. You know, I think your book, again, Doug, Saint Badass, is when you share all these letters in here, it's really, it brings a lot of questions up for the world. You know, it's like, what are we going to think about this? What do we think about that? And to hear others' perspectives on it versus always having our same old dogma in our head, really, you know, sometimes it says, you know, I didn't know that my story, you know, we say it felt bad at the time, but you know what? I lived through it. Oh my gosh, how can I help someone else live through it? Or I can see others are having a much harder time, and how can I bring them through it also? In other words, you almost want to feel that you're the caster of lifeboats. Do you know what I mean? You almost want to feel that way in your life, because once you do and you experience something, you say, you know what? It's got to be, let's just stick all these lifeboats out there and see how others are, you know, or others are able to want to hold on. And as soon as they hold on, it's like, hey, brother, pick your hand up and pull you in. People need a hand. They don't need a hand up. They don't need a hand out. They need a hand. And, you know, I've always said, and many times on my radio show, is that one walks on one side, one on the other side of the bridge, and you meet in the middle. Well, you know what? If that other person is crawling up the bridge, do you just stand there and wait for them to, you put your hand down so they'll rise up? Heck no. See, my thought, I lay down on the ground next to them and talk to them and say, hey, isn't it cool? Look at the stars above. You know, that's just the way I think of things. But I think it's also, too, is about having other thoughts and ideas and say, isn't life just as cool as it is? Yes?
Yes, very much so. And I love your image of throwing out all these lifeboats. I think that's delightful and very, very powerful. But we all can live the life we have in a way that is affirming and positive. There'll be rough spots. We're all going to have rough spots, and some people, the rough spots are rougher and longer. But we can still have this affirmation, and we can see the, you know, there's
there's joy around the wonderful things that we miss because we're so turned internally to our own thoughts and what we want and what we don't want, that we're missing the world around us.
Yeah, and we really do miss the world around us, you know. I think even if, you know, I am, and in closing I'll say this, that, you know, mine is I go outside every single day and take a picture of the sun, almost every day. I get at least 5 a week. Every day time I do, I can guarantee you I've got 50,000 photos of different things. Well, you know, Doug, I think what we really talked about today is how do you live a life and you're able to go through things and say, you know what, life is really going to be okay regardless of my circumstances. It's just really how I choose to live in the moment, don't you think?
Yes, very much so. And I think that's why these stories of these four men, those stories are so powerful, because they're in the worst of circumstances and are still able and do choose to follow the life that they feel is worth living, and it is.
Right. You know, Doug, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you and the book Saint Badass? That would be great.
Yes. My website is feedkindness.com, and Saint Badass, Personal Transcendence in Tucker Max Hell is available at Amazon, and it can also be ordered through a local bookstore.
Doug, it was such a pleasure to have you. I think we talk about this so many different times. We say, life is going to be okay. Tell us your story. Tell us your story. You and I are two people that are say, I want to hear your story. Because you know what? I think the story is the writing on the door. And until you are hear the story, you don't know what's going to be on the other side. So you know what? Just tell the story. When the door opens, then that just brings us to the place where we can work. Yes?
I love it. That's a beautiful image. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Doug Carnine and his book, Saint Badass, Personal Transcendence in Tucker Max Hell, please do check out the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll go directly to the website. And really, it is about opening your eyes, putting out your hand, breathing in the air, and being able to be present in the moment. Whatever shows up in front of you, please just experience it. It's not good, bad, or indifferent. Experience it. It's there. Just enjoy it. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit DrJeanetteGallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.